Way back when I was thinking about starting a high-ticket dropshipping business, the one thing I was looking for was someone to show me what one of these sites looks like. So John and I have done that for you at dropshipbreakthrough.com/go. So head to dropshipbreakthrough.com/go and watch the free training.
Welcome to the Dropship Podcast, where you'll learn how to build and grow a high-ticket dropshipping business and hear stories from successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. Let's kick this thing off.
Hey, welcome to the Dropship Podcast. And today we're going to talk about three things you have to do in your business in year one. You have to do them. There's no way around this. And I know John's going to say that there's certainly a lot more that you can do and should do. You must do these things. We probably could have made this like 10 things, honestly. But I think these encapsulate three things that we really want to hammer home.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are other things you must do. There you go. I said it. But you do definitely have to do these things. These three things. The first one of those is, I mean, you have to get your Google Ads funnel right. You have to get on top of and get your head around, build your understanding and your practice around using Google Ads traffic, primarily Google Shopping, of course, but there's some other things in there. Get it producing sales for your business and ideally profitable sales, of course. And you know, the reason why that's important to me, I mean, there's a few reasons. One, you need to make some sales, right? You just need to make sales in the start in your business. And there is no, for high ticket products, there is no better way to do that than on Google Ads, that you can do it quickly so that you can start learning about your business, so that you can get the sense of this thing works. Because if you get that, it's much easier to keep doing the whole thing, right? I mean, there's just so much, such a great sense of achievement when you get those first sales coming in. Like, it all becomes more real. You can see a lot more pathways and things like that. So it's just something you need to do, and you can't really do it any other way, I don't think, or as effectively. You know, it's the quickest way that you can start like interacting in your market, right? You can start getting like just seeing what works on my website, what doesn't work on my website. And so, yeah, you absolutely have to get that right. You know, I wouldn't even say you need to get that right over the course of the first year. You need to get that right pretty quickly.
You start learning all the weird shit people search. Now you have a good estimate of like, I bet they're probably searching for this brand, or I bet they're probably searching for this product name or product type, but man, people search for the dumbest stuff, and like, yeah, it'll honestly kind of make you sad for society when you start seeing how bad people spell, even with like a spell check built into Google, and just, it's wild.
I want to believe there's a massive disconnect between how people think and how they type, like as in they just miss words. Because if people think the way they type sometimes, yeah, you're right, people must be so dumb.
Yeah, the questions you get in like Answer the Public, where they're asking a question, how to something that doesn't, you know what I mean?
It's weird. Doesn't make sense. Yeah, yeah.
I will say, what I'm 39. How old are you? 41. Anyone older than us is probably one finger typing, right? Like I was one of the first classes, if not the one right above me, to learn typing. So anyone above me is still doing the, you know, the one finger tap. If you can see this on video, I'm sure you know exactly someone who's doing that. They even do it on their phones. You know what I mean? And so that might be the reason, like that, you know, they're sure struggling. But you're going to learn a lot. You're going to laugh a little bit. I promise you that you're going to laugh at some of the search terms, but you're going to learn like where your assumptions were right and where your assumptions were wrong. If you can get this funnel right. So, you know, the more generic terms, the more top of the funnel need to be in your high, and you're going to want to spend a little less, right? The middle of the funnel terms are going to be in your medium. Sometimes that's brand name. Sometimes that's other medium, middle of the funnel type terms are going to be in your medium priority, and in your low priority. I know this is counterintuitive if you've never heard this before, but your low priority, the one that fires last after it has been told it shouldn't fire in high and it shouldn't fire in medium, and the low priority is going to be where those, you know, those very valuable bottom of the funnel, these people are looking for a product type search terms, and heck, you might find some other things that convert that surprise you along the way. But you have to get that funnel right. You have to understand that I want to pay more for the more valuable terms and pay less for the less valuable. And it's a process. This is something that came to me really simply. I think I understood the interface. It wasn't that confusing, but I think I'm rare. Like, and I think you're rare too. I think this comes to you pretty easy as well. And it can be confusing. And so you have to get this right. You have to pay attention. You have to understand what's happening. You have to understand where it's going wrong and be able to fix it and move keywords where they should be.
Mm. And it's a really hard thing to explain and demonstrate on a podcast as well. Like, it's one of those things where the method that we use is a little bit kind of counterintuitive in the explanation, and it just doesn't make sense unless you're actually looking at it. So I would say, like, as you go through your high ticket dropshipping journey, and certainly in the first year, like, you really have to become a student somehow of something, like, because you, if you just listen to me and Ben talk about this and then go and try and build this Google Ads method, you're going to get it wrong. Like, yeah, it's just inevitable. It's one of those weird things that you kind of have to see it to understand it, I think. And so, that's how I first learned about it. There was a YouTube video of a guy.
The Nike shoes guy?
Yeah, it was a talk he gave at an PPC Hero conference, which was a conference that used to run, I don't know if it still does, over in one of the big advertising conferences at the time over in Europe they used to run. I think this one was at in London. And he walked through it on it, but it was on a screen, right? He had examples and he talked through it, and not maybe exactly the same way we do it, but fairly similar enough that I could go and start experimenting in my first business with it and sort of working out it out a bit more for high ticket products. I think the example used when he used it was low ticket products like shoes, right? Which the theory, it still stands true, but
I actually ran the funnel the other way before I saw that.
Yeah.
So right, the words are counterintuitive, right? High priority. You would think that's the most priority. No, in fact, that just means that's the one that's going to fire first, and you have to tell it, these words shouldn't fire in here, and they'll go lower. So I was confused. So I had it set up the other way, and every fucking day I'd have to go in there and put negative keywords in every day. And when I saw that video, it was like the greatest epiphany ever. We were teaching it the wrong way in this little course that I had back in the day. And then I switched it and I called it the inverted funnel. I'm not even sure where I came up with that. It's not, some people still call it that today, which is funny because it's inverted with the titles, with the words that Google is using in there. But once you wrap your head around it, it's rather simple. Are you enjoying the show? Are you getting loads of value? That's amazing. If you can do John and I one quick favor, hit the subscribe button, hit the follow button, leave a review. All of these things help us to reach more people, change more lives. And it's one small thing we ask of you. So again, hit that subscribe button, hit the follow button if you're on a podcast player, and leave a review if you're on iTunes or if you're on Spotify. We appreciate it very, very much.
That's right. And you're right. I mean, some people do get it immediately, and some people it takes a bit longer, like wrapping your head around PPC and like pay-per-click advertising and how it all works. And so if you're somebody that struggles a little bit, like you're listening to this right now going, oh, what the hell are John and Ben talking about, or I feel I've had people tell me, like, when I look at this stuff I just feel really dumb, and because they hear me talk about it or you talk about it and it sounds really simple, or we make it sound a little bit simple. And so I mean, that's not a great feeling to have. But literally, if you feel that when you think about this stuff or when you look at it or whatever, don't feel bad. That's actually probably more people are that way than people who just, it just kind of all clicks together immediately and they just go and do it. I think that's a bit less common. And so the good news is, though, is that even if you don't feel like you're getting it when you first look at it or first think about it, you can get it. Sometimes you just have to rewatch things. You just have to keep going. You just have to do some practice in your own account. You will get the hang of it. I mean, we've taught hundreds of people, at least hundreds, how to do this. Pretty much everybody gets it sooner or later, right? You've got to stick with it.
Have you ever heard of the book Mindset from Carol Dweck? So it's a pretty popular book, and it really just tells you there's two mindsets. One's a growth mindset and one's a fixed mindset. And all growth is that you believe you can learn something and you can adapt. And it's surprising how many people in this world think it's a fixed mindset. I'm not good at math. I'm not good at this. And I think we hear that occasionally when people get into Google Ads, I'm not good at Google Ads, or I can't do this. And the reality is, everything in life should fall into a growth mindset. You can get better at anything if you simply put time into it. And so to your point, you know, I thought in the beginning, why isn't anyone getting this? Because it came so simple to me, but that's not the case for most people. And it took me a little while to realize that. And then when I did, I was able to work with people and be like, all right, let's work through this one time. And then let's work through this another time. And let's do it one more time. And in our course, you can watch the videos. We have coaches that can help you inside of there. And so maybe it'll take you a little bit, but I promise you can learn this. It's not like it's a new language you have to learn. It's just a new interface and understanding, again, the customer journey. And once you wrap your head around that,
yeah,
you'll get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like that old thing. It's just practice, right? And for most people, when they come into marketing, it's an unfamiliar world. So where the practice, like where the better outcomes come in is making it a familiar world. Like, you know, I mean, you've just got to do something, right? And I think the challenge people have is that they're paying for clicks and things like that in the beginning. And if it's not quite working, they just feel extra pressure that they can't take their time to learn it. Like they have to get it right today. You just got to stick with it. Like once it becomes familiar, it'll just all start clicking together. And the more you're in a space, the more familiar it gets. Like that new environment starts to become like it is for you and me, kind of like second nature, like, you know, the place where you belong. And so there's nothing complex about it. It's not rocket science. Like it literally is something that literally any person can learn. Like a lot of marketers are not that intelligent, right? You know, I mean, it's, you don't need to go to university to learn how to run PPC ads, right? Like, so you can do it. But once you do it, you know, you're going to start getting traffic coming into your site. And not all that traffic's going to convert straight away. And
you,
so
you have to think about the fact that the idea that someone's going to click one ad and they're going to buy, totally possible, but not all that likely. They're likely going to think about their purchase before they make it, especially if it's a high ticket item. And so we need to get back in front of these people. And I was shocked, and I'll be honest with you, I was shocked at our news event how many people raised their hand when you asked how many of you are running remarketing and email marketing like we teach in the course. And nearly every hand went up. It seems like such an easy win. And to me, it's a must. It plugs some holes in your bucket that you are automatically going to have. You're driving traffic, driving bottom of the funnel traffic. You have to stay in touch with those people. You have to do remarketing. You have to do email marketing. I don't know. You preached this pretty hard at the event that we just did at the time of this recording. And I don't know. Preach away. Like, this is a must. You have to do this. And it's so simple. Really, it's not that hard to get set up.
Yeah, it's not, actually. It's not to get the ball rolling, to get it happening. It's not that. It's something. I mean, I love remarketing and email marketing because they're like marketing channels that you have a lot of customizability about. Like you can really tell whatever story you want through those channels. You can design ads and emails however you want. You're in much more control than you are with, say, Google shopping ads, where you're kind of locked into that fixed interface. And this is all I can say in my ad. And Google's going to pretty much work that out for me mostly, right? But yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to get started. I mean, I gave a talk on this at our live event, and I looked up just to refresh my memory because I had always heard the you know, the saying, like, it's the average e-commerce customer, it's like 7 or 8 touch points. And I thought I'll refresh my understanding of, like, where do people think that's at in 2023? This was when end of 2023, I was looking at this. And quite a few places were pulling out a figure of between 1 and 50 touch points, right? Which is wild. Like some people, like you said, some people do buy on the first visit, right? If they're at the bottom of the funnel, they were already looking for that product. Yeah, you can grab a little bit of that, like a little bit. And I want to stress, it's a little bit.
And if your offer is great, it might be a little bit more than a little bit. So pay attention to John when he's talking about offers, because that's what's going to hook somebody on the moment, right? And the good copywriting, the direct response stuff.
Right, absolutely. But that's never a majority of your market. So if your plan is to build a big business, you can't do that just by hanging out right at the very bottom of the funnel and kind of scrapping for the little tidbits of people that might be persuaded away by you at the last moment, right? That's a great, okay place to start, but you got to go much further than that. And so you've got to get into the realms of people who need 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 touch points before they're ready to buy. And how are you going to do that? Because you can't do that if you just run Google shopping ads by themselves. You could run some other ads, search text ads, or that sort of thing that might fill in some of those touch points. But the reality is the more opportunity you give people to have connection with your business and to see your brand, to hear from you, you can speed up those touch points. And I went from reading that stat to looking in my Google Analytics account. Like, so I thought, oh, well, I should go. I want to go and look at this in a fairly new business that was launched that year. And I thought, I want to see what that looks like. And I saw exactly that thing. Like, I saw people that like clicked on ads 15 times, which kind of sucked because it was like, that's a bit of ad spend to get that customer. But like, yeah, people who are like, their touch points were like, yeah, higher than that, like 20, 25, and everywhere between 1 and I think the highest I saw was something like 30 in that particular account. And that's wild to me. Like, that's such an array of different things. And so not only do you want to provide more touch points, you want to provide them in different places. That can speed up the customer journey. But also, it's just like sometimes you can't rush the customer journey. So the more your business grows, you're going to get more top of funnel traffic or middle of funnel, right? So if you do the sort of stuff that you talk about, the SEO stuff, you're going to get people who are aware they have a problem that they're looking for a solution for. But there's still a ways before they get to the point where they're like, yes, that's the right product for me and this is the right place to buy it, et cetera, et cetera. And they may need a bunch of information to make that those steps through the funnel. So once again, retargeting and email marketing offers you the avenue to provide those steps for somebody. Because as a marketer, if you just leave it up to your customer to work it all out for themselves, the chance that they're going to work it all out with your business is like very small. Because if there's another business out there who's like providing all of those steps in the middle, they're going to grab your customer's attention away from you. So that there's a great saying in marketing that the business that has the most attention wins, right? And so once again, you get somebody clicks on an ad from you. What a lot of high ticket dropshippers are relying on is that that person will at some point just make it back to my store. Like as in you're the only person in this space and they're just going to automatically come back to you. That's not what happens. You have to go out of your way almost to make sure that when they're ready to come back and purchase, that it's going to be your site they come back to. And if that's over the course of a month or 2 months or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, like how are you creating those pathways? If you can't say how you're creating those pathways, then that's something you must do. And I think going in line with the stuff we've talked about on the show before about content to commerce and that sort of thing, which you have talked about, this stuff becomes even more important because once again, these are the things that no other businesses are doing well. Very few businesses are doing these things well, particularly in the high ticket space, right? So if you can just do, everybody can run Google Shopping ads, not necessarily well, but they can put an ad up there, right? That can sit right next to your ad. Somebody cannot put a retargeting ad up there that sits right next to your retargeting ad, right? That's just not the way that they're even shown. But once again, nobody's going to say the same thing as you in your retargeting ad. Your Google Shopping ad will look exactly the same as somebody else's, almost at least. But you like, there's just so many reasons why you should do it. I can probably think of more. But to me, remarketing, email marketing, I mean, they've always been musts. But in 2024 and beyond, I think they become even more musts, particularly if you're focusing on content.
Yeah, if I had to give you just like, do this quickly, it'd be set up dynamic remarketing on Google. Sure. You have to flip a little switch in your merchant center, set up a display market, display network ad, assign your feed. That's it. If you can just do that, that's like the base. That's the must do here. Facebook DPA, same thing. Can you push your catalog over there? Google, how to set up a Facebook DPA ad. It'll walk you right through it. Can you do those base things? Can you set up one email capture that goes on every single page of your site? And hopefully give more value than grab your discount code today. If you can, great. Just think through your own journey to buying any product. Did you just go to Google, know exactly what you were looking for? You had done zero research beforehand, clicked, bought, and that was it? No, like you wanted questions answered. You probably watched YouTube videos. You read articles. You're going to spend time thinking about this stuff. And you might need a little nudge. You might not have been ready to buy that night. You were laying in bed and then you were like, oh, fuck, I got to get up early for work tomorrow. And you went to bed and you forgot about it. The next day when you're, you know, taking your morning dump and you're scrolling Instagram and you saw, oh, yeah, I forgot I was looking at that. Or like on break and lunch and then you're scrolling it. Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that. Like, so just can you just get in front of people? And know you're not going to pay for every one of those touch points. But if you can just be a reminder, that's the base for me, I think. But if you can go above and beyond that, some of the stuff we taught at our live event, some of the stuff we teach in our course where you can really segment people as part of their journey and hit them at different angles and the little different avatars. Maybe you've heard our avatar episode. Like that's when it can get really, really fun. And there's no shortage of places you can remarket either, right? You know, Google, Bing has their own system. I don't think I've ever actually used it other than layering for audiences. TikTok, Pinterest, Twitter. There's no shortage of places you can run remarketing and you just want to be everywhere. I definitely subscribe to Jay Abraham saying, you know, 3D marketing. Anywhere someone looks, you want to be.
Yeah, or omnipresence. That's the other word, right? The, you know, it goes along with that attention thing. If you're omnipresent, which means no matter where somebody goes online, they see a message from you, right? Then you have the most attention, right? And so, and then you win. right? It's not quite that simple, but you know, I'm a big believer in that. And a lot of people will say to me, oh, John, I run retargeting ads and I can't attribute a direct ROAS to those ads. I'm going to stop running them. Mm-hmm. And it kind of misses the point. Yes, some retargeting ads will produce sales directly off that click, but and that's great. And you should aim to achieve that for sure. It's fantastic. But the reality is it's as much about reminding your customer that you're there and making sure, like I said, that when they come to the point of purchase, your brand is the brand that they immediately associate with the type of products you sell, right? Like if I'm somebody who, you know, sells saunas, every time my customer thinks of saunas, I want them to think of John's sauna brand, not somebody else's. And if you can get that happening in your market, and if you're in an enthusiast market, I truly believe you can become the name that people associate, you know, with that thing, which is one of the great things about the way we teach how you should find the products you sell, right? Because if you're just selling like random homewares or something, you're probably not going to replace yourself in much of your market's mind versus the big players who have been in the market for like 30 years, right? Similarly, if you sell everything, you're not going to replace Amazon in people's minds as the everything store, right? That's never going to happen ever for anybody else other than Amazon, frankly. But it is possible if you're in a store that serves a very specific customer with a very specific interest, for you to be that, actually to be that business. You've got to get, you know, you've got to be everywhere. You've got to get the attention.
Yeah, you've heard me talk about how I don't like to look at direct attribution on ads like this.
Yeah.
Here, so if you're already running this, you're listening to this, you're one of our students who's been around a while, flip that on and then go compare your direct traffic from the month before to the new month where you had that on. And if you have no sales in your remarketing, but your direct traffic went up and your sales from direct traffic went up, that's your remarketing working, right? Same with email. I'm not a big fan of clicking in my Gmail app on my phone and going in their little sub browser. I like to leave there. I'll just go type you in and go back to it. And so I'm not attributable. And you might think email's not working, but direct traffic went through the roof. Total revenue went through the roof and you can't really figure out where it came from. You're doing the right thing. So this is why I don't like to directly attribute. A lot of people will be like, I got 40 clicks on this keyword on this ad and it didn't convert. That must be a bad keyword. And that's just not how I look at things personally. I like to look at, here's how much I spent on marketing and here's my revenue and what the percentage is. And I think you can see direct traffic go up. Is there any other place that you would say like you can say if this, then this when it comes to remarketing? Because you're right. I don't see direct attribution and I run a lot. There's an old episode of Remarketing Essentials where I showed you a bunch of weird things that I've tried over the years and none of them had like, oh, this remarketing ad crushes for this reason. It might get a lot of clicks, but it's not directly converting. They're not directly converting that day, but I know that's part of the process.
Yeah. I mean, I take the same approach as you. I definitely, which is different to when I started for sure. I'm definitely looking more at like what's the health of my ad account overall rather than always drilling. I mean, there are circumstances where you want to drill down, but yeah, to me, I don't worry about retargeting too much. Certainly I would be looking at metrics like does one retarget, if I'm trying different retargeting approaches, do I get a better response rate to one, like a better click-through rate or something like that versus for one rather than another? Because that might tell me that I'm actually hitting the message that more customers need to hear, right? I'm talking to my customers better with that particular ad versus another one. So a click-through rate is a good indication of that, right? Similarly, in your email marketing, I mean, an email, this is often the truth. Like there are companies that there's like things that I'm interested in, you know, it might be supplements or it might be, you know, tech products, which I buy a lot of, like we're fucking surrounded with them by them in this room. And there are some businesses that I've got on the email list for who email out every day. I don't open all of those emails, but you're damn sure if you ask me, John, where are you going to go get a microphone from in Australia? There's one company that always comes straight to my mind. And it's not because their website's better or they're a better company or whatever. It's because I literally see an email every time I open my email. When I'm like opening my email, I see an email from them. I don't click on most of them, at least most of them, probably a vast majority of them. I click on some sometimes. That's probably why they're not in my spam folder yet. But it's just, I keep seeing their name. Like it just, like repetition, it just gets burnt into your retina kind of thing and you can't unsee it. right? If you keep seeing the same thing over and over and over, like repetition in marketing is a very important concept. You've got to keep telling people the same thing. And if you do that enough, they just remember it. You can't forget it. Once again, that's not to suggest that you should send out a bunch of shitty emails to people that don't get opened and all that sort of thing. You absolutely have to be mindful of sending out the quality and finding things that people want. But it's the same thing in email. Like I would look at like open rates and things like that and compare emails to each other, because you will definitely see trends there. I sent this email talking to people this way and you got a better click-through rate from inside the email to my website, or it got a bit that, you know, I talked about this thing in the headline and it got a better open rate. And so once again, you can certainly learn that your market responds better to certain messages than others. But from a conversion perspective, like I say, I mean, if my overall metrics are improving, then it's certainly, you know, and particularly for a business down the track, your Google ads and things like that, your front end traffic will get to a point where you don't get it any better, right? Like Google shopping ads, not in the beginning. In the beginning, there's loads of improvement to make. Like we've talked about it here. But at some point, you just hit your Google shopping ads to as good as they're going to get, right? And it takes a lot longer for SEO for most people, sure. But once again, you're going to get for X keyword and blah, blah, blah. It's going to get to so good, right? So if your growth on those things keeps happening post getting it to that stage, it's because you're doing other things in your business better, like your remarketing, like your email marketing, da, 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 da. And so you can probably attribute some of that growth to improvements in those things or changes you make to those things. Because like I said, they're almost infinitely customizable. Like retargeting, like email marketing, it's infinitely customizable. You can test almost anything you can think of. And in the case of email marketing, primarily that's because it's traffic you own, which is another reason you should be doing it. Once you get people on your email list, that can't be taken away from you unless they unsubscribe or something like that, right? And so building that in your business is you become less reliant on Google Merchant Center, for example, which is a common pain point for people who get into high ticket drop shipping.
I hope people see how passionate we are about this one, because I was shocked. Yeah. I was shocked at how many people weren't doing it.
Yeah.
I think we see it a lot, and it's such an easy win, honestly. You just got to get the baseline done, and then, you know, learn from us. We'll teach you some funny ways to do it. And speaking of funny, if your customer's funny, you should be funny to your customer. You have to talk to your customer. That's number three on our list. Too often we see people doing copy paste on their product pages, no content on their collection pages, never writing a piece of content. And when they do, they're paying a crappy company or a Fiverr guy or somebody who's just writing the article based on what they saw. And I would encourage you to take time to learn who your customer is. We've even done an episode on that. Learn who your customer is. Separate out the different avatars that are buying from you and talk directly to them. Understand the pain they're in, the problem they're trying to solve, the fears they have, and talk to directly to these people and treat them like, you know, every single number that you see in Google Analytics, that's a person behind the screen. And they're raising their hand saying, I really want to learn more about what you have, or I'm interested in buying your products, or I have this problem to solve. And we have to talk directly to them. This is actually kind of a hard thing to teach, but once you wrap your head around it, I don't think you can ever not see it. Like, you just realize it's someone. And you probably realize when you get your first phone call and you talk to Betsy or Jimmy or Bob or whoever it is that's calling you, yeah, this is a person behind the screen. It's not just, how do I make this number higher so this number is higher, right? Like, we're talking to people. This is a service business. You have to talk to your customer.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, it just speeds you up so much. Like, and once again, this is something we talked about at a live event, right? It's one of our do the work things as well, right? If you've been listening into those episodes, like, if you don't talk to your customer, you're always just guessing, right? Like, you're guessing how to grow your business. You're guessing about what you should be offering. You're guessing about what marketing is working and what isn't. You're guessing about what you should talk about in your content. You're always going to be guessing and testing. And yes, you can, you should absolutely test and make educated assumptions and things like that. But that's a really slow way to do it if that's all you're doing. It will take you longer to grow your business than if you just prioritize talking to your customer, asking them questions. Like, when we say talk to your customer, it's not just give them what they're asking you for. You should absolutely do that. But like, put it back on them as well. Say, hey, man, like, what's going on for you in this market? What should we be? What do you think we should be doing? What other sites are you looking at? Blah, blah, blah. All this sort of stuff. And you will just learn about what you should be, how you should be existing in your market like way quicker when your customer, the only person who's really important to your business, just tells you, man, this is how it is. You can then just go and do that thing rather than testing five different things to work it out.
I'm going
to
give you a real live example. If you're on video, you can see me holding up these random headphones I have sitting here, right? Oftentimes you'll see the description is, these headphones are the best headphones on the market. They are black and have an adjustable head strap. You can hear sounds through them from decibel levels 0 to 400 or whatever, right? And unbelievable stereo audio with only one cord. It has two different inputs. Like, that's what most people's descriptions look like. Whereas, you know, what is the customer behind the screen looking for? Are you having trouble hearing that webinar you've been watching? Do you miss the deep sounds of insert band name here? Like, talk directly to your customer. Or one of your avatars might be someone who is tired of hearing outside noises, whether on a plane or whether it's their wife or whatever it may be. And you can say, like, one of your headlines should be, remove all that background noise so you can finally get the focus you deserve or something like that. You have to know who you're talking to and not just say noise canceling at levels of 32 decibels. Like, that's the information you're going to get from your supplier. And so can you understand the problem someone has before they come to you? It's amazing that we just sit here and we think about, we list a product and we just assume the person behind the screen knows everything they need to know. They understand the problem. Like, they're just coming here to look at a couple little factual data points and then, yep, I'm going to make this. But the reality is we buy on emotion. And they're coming there with an emotion. And so can we invoke that emotion and help them understand that this product will, in fact, take them from that emotion to the after state they are desiring? And I think you can do that in a lot of ways. But you have to know who you're talking to in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. And you do. And you have to remember that you're selling an outcome, not a product. Right? Your customer has eyes. They can see what the product is. So why the fuck would you tell them what the product is? Right? Like, you don't need to tell me the headphones are black. You've got a product image. I can see that.
Oh, right. They also come in gold, John, yeah, in case you're wondering.
Oh, sorry. You're selling an outcome. That's why people buy products. They're not buying the product. I don't buy a set of headphones so I have a set of headphones sitting on my desk. I buy a set of headphones so I can hear whatever it is I want to hear, music, sounds, et cetera, at a quality level that I'm interested in. It's an outcome that I'm buying. And so that's what you should be talking about. How does your product solve that problem, produce that outcome? How does it do that? They don't do it because it's black or whatever, you know. And there is definitely a progression that your customer has to go through in order to make the decision to buy. And they have to experience an emotion first, which they then have to have supported by logic. So there's absolutely a place on your product page for things like talking about features and benefits. It's just further down the page, right?
I think that's the first place people go, right? You get from your supplier often just features. And then the first step I often see people take is feature so that benefit, right? Yeah. Multiple plugs so that you can plug in anywhere. And I would encourage you to start with the so that. Like, say, plug in anywhere with its multiple feature attached or like multiple plug-in attachment. Like, that's how you talk to, like, that's the problem it's trying to solve. What is the outcome you're getting to? So think feature, so that benefit. And all your customer cares about is that second half. How can you talk directly to that second half or ask them a question of the problem they're trying to solve that this outcome solves? Do you have this problem and this problem and this problem? This product takes you there by doing X, Y, and Z. Like, it's not difficult to do, but it took me probably a couple of years to really wrap my head around this. I started with features only on my 3D printers, right? And then it became features so that benefit with 3D printers. And then, yeah, honestly, I'm not even sure I got there before I sold that business, actually talking directly to that engineer in the background who wanted the different types of plastics and metals that they could print with and the reason they were doing so.
Yeah. One of the ways I like to think about this is think about, like, if we were two people having a conversation and I was telling you about a product and why I love it, right? If I'm talking about those headphones, I'm just going to say, I love that I can plug it in anywhere. I'm not going to say to you, oh, well, it's got this, this, and this, so I can plug it in everywhere. Like, that's not how people communicate. I just say, man, I really love it. I can plug it in anywhere. It fucking sounds awesome. It sounds way better than these other ones, blah, blah, blah. But I wouldn't talk to you about the features first. I wouldn't say, well, Ben, do you know that it's got, you know, this amplifier and this double plug and blah, blah, blah. And what that means is that I can do this, this, and this. You should communicate to your customer like people communicate to each other, because they're going to instantly, like, you're just going to cut out fluff, like unnecessary verbiage that you just don't need, but you're going to get straight to the heart of what they're actually wanting to hear. So that's sometimes that, like, think about it. If somebody told me why they love this product, what would they say?
This product?
Oh, any product, right?
Yeah, they would tell you the best. Like, this is where I said mine reviews. But they would go straight to,
yeah, reviews would be gold. But just talking to your customers on the phone as well. Like, if you call your, this can be a once you've started making sales trick as well. One of the things you should be doing is calling every customer, like post sale at some point, to make, you know, touch base with them, see how they're going. Are they using the product? If they're happy, do they want to leave you a review? Like, you could ask them, like, yeah, well, then you're going to return it. That's going to happen anyway, whether you call them or not. But you could ask them, like, you've had a chance to use the product. What do you love about it?
What's your favorite part?
Yeah. What do you love about it? See what they say. Whatever they say, you should put that on your product page. That should then take that, chuck it in your description, because when other people who might be interested in that product come and read it, they're going to go, oh yeah, fuck yeah, that's great. I'm like that person. You know,
if one of your customers writes a review that said, I love the way these headphones make Michael Bolton sound, you should snip that little thing and insert it in the middle of your description as a review. Just put quotes on there. I love the way these headphones make Michael Bolton sound. If they're buying from you, somebody else wants to hear Michael Bolton the same way.
And that in and of itself is just hilarious. So you're going to delight everybody because Michael Bolton sucks.
Well, I mean, what? I was trying to think of a band. What is a band that you could put in that everyone's going to love? Because I'm sure someone has an issue with everything. Journey, maybe Journey. Swift, if you have a younger audience. Yeah. Even then, I'm sure there are some anti-Swifters.
The Beatles. I don't know. If you're a little bit older.
That might be out of our age range.
Maybe.
All right. Leave a comment below this video. If you're watching this, what is your idea? What is one band you could say on a headphone product page where everyone would be like, hands down, these guys are great? Because I think for John and I, it would be maybe Tool or something that we both agreed upon.
Yeah.
But some people might not even know who Tool is, you know?
Not many people.
Probably the same way with some of those older bands. Like, we're getting old, man. Do you think there's like a 20-year-old who's like, those Beatles, man? The only reason we do is because our parents listen to the Beatles, right? Even then, my dad was a little aged out of that too. So I'm not sure what it would be. What is that band? It's probably from like the 90s or 2000s era where it's like everyone loves this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really weird when it comes to music. Well, not weird, but like I've never been in the mainstream.
Yeah.
Like I never listened to radio or anything like that. I never have, never will.
Even nowadays, like Sirius has a lot of channels for you and I.
No, I listen, like I get a lot of recommendations from various things that, yeah, I mean, I don't listen to Sirius, but I'm aware of it, right? I don't listen to it, but like I get a lot of recommendations from places, but they're very specific to what I listen to already. Yeah. So like there's things that I get recommendations for metal, for example, like here's the top 10 new bands you should listen to. I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah. I go and listen to them. I'm like, do I like this? Do I not like this? Where like I get to hear where that genre of music is going. But yeah, I've never listened to like mainstream, like pop radio things, which is what most appeals to most people, apparently. I mean, you know, there's some, like we saw in our Spotify Wrapped last year that a majority of our listeners, the biggest music genre they listen to is actually rap.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some hip hop.
I told John I would write a rap. If I get enough comments below this video or in Spotify or in our group, I'll write a high ticket dropshipping rap. I will perform it. I used to write love letters to girls when I was a kid. Like I loved writing poetry. So I'm pretty good with rhyming. I'm pretty good at putting words together. And I think I could do a high ticket dropshipping rap.
Please, guys, make it happen. Please make it happen.
Oh, man. All right, that's enough. Three things you must do in year one. We set them. There's a bunch more. I'm sure we'll touch on them in other podcasts.
Thanks for listening to the Dropship Podcast. You can find all the show notes for this episode at dropshippodcast.com. And if you're ready to take the next step in your dropshipping journey, we invite you to join us inside Dropship Breakthrough, where John and I will walk you through step-by-step in starting your own high-ticket dropshipping e-commerce business. But that's not all. Dropship Breakthrough will also teach you everything you'll need to know to grow your business and take it to the next level. So head over to dropshipbreakthrough.com and sign up for our free training that will help you take the first steps towards building and growing your own profitable high-ticket dropshipping business.
John and I both love business, think about it all the time, can't turn it off, and don't know why anyone would want to. And because of that, we started a second podcast where we can talk about everything we've ever wanted to talk about in business. not just dropshipping. We like talking about all things business. So if you want to hear John and I talk about all sorts of stuff, from camel meat dropshipping businesses to PDF dropshipping to a guy gambling $100 every single day on YouTube Shorts to how OnlyFans taught us lessons in business, we're all over the place over there, but it's a really fun podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, you love John and I, head over to your podcast player of choice and look for The Low Bar Podcast. You'll see a blue image, and you'll see a cartoon version of John and myself. And go back and start at episode one. I promise you will not regret this. This is one of the more fun projects that I have done recently. I know John's having fun too, so we'd love it if you joined us. Check out The Low Bar Podcast on YouTube or wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts.